Our schedule of scriptural readings this fall is taking us on this interesting journey of the creation of families, their dissolution, and then their legacies. We started with the first human that was simply a human, which then became divided into two, Adam and Eve. And those two betrayed God and were kicked out of the garden. But they were still able to have children, and so they had two sons. And then one of those sons betrayed God and his parents and his brother through murder. And yet the generations continued. Last week, through Jenya Coffee, we met Abraham and Sarah. Abraham and Sarah were old, and they didn't have a home, and they weren't fertile. They couldn't have kids. And they were cynical, but they were also kind. And so eventually they had a child, and that child's name was Isaac. And Isaac came with this promise that many more generations would follow. Isaac married Rebecca, and they had two sons, Jacob and Esau. Now, Jacob was a real stinker from the get-go. From the moment he was born, he was trying to steal his brother Esau's birthright so he could get all the blessings of being the firstborn son. Jacob dreamed dreams, Jacob wrestled with an angel, and he became permanently marked by that, and so he was named Israel. Israel, Jacob, had four wives. One of them was Rachel, and with Rachel, he had Joseph. And you can see this family tree on the cover of your bulletin. Now, we heard a lot of Joseph's story today, but it's even longer, and we skipped a big chunk between chapter 37 and chapter 50. So after Joseph is captured into slavery, he's taken to Egypt, where he is enslaved, and he barely manages to escape from a false charge of assault. And having done that, he rose up through the ranks in Pharaoh's household. This foreigner became one of the most important people in Pharaoh's court, which was useful. All of his trials proved to be useful because he was in the right place to protect people in the future. He'd had dreams. Joseph had this dream that you heard about with all the wheat. And he had more dreams and messages from God that he needed to prepare for a famine. And so because of his new power in Pharaoh's court, he got Pharaoh to agree to save up enough food to protect the nation. And ultimately, he not only protected his master and his master's people, but his own cruel, cruel brothers. We hear today that he forgave those brothers eventually. He was reunited with his father, Jacob Israel, and then was able to go mourn his father when the time came. Joseph, this upstart younger brother who was telling everyone that they would bow to him, did in fact become the patriarch of this family. And he lived to see many generations that came after him. Between the international politics, court politics, forgiveness, and jealousy, this is a rich story. But what I want to focus on first are the dreams of the future. The dreams and the long vision that prepare us for the future. I want to talk about stewardship. So in August, Terry Potter, wave your hand, Terry. There he is. Your chair of your financial stewardship team launched this current stewardship campaign that we're in, raising our monies for 2017. And on that day in August when he was here, he said that stewardship takes many forms. Stewardship is our time and our talents. Just like I say to the kids, your being here today is a gift, not only to God, but to all of us. It's also a gift to bake cookies for our fellowship time, to pick up the kids from school on Wednesday afternoon and drive them here for Wednesday afternoon club. It is good stewardship to share of your gifts in October when we're going to do some cleaning and some repair work on the campus. But stewardship is also about your money. Stewardship's also about our actual treasure, our financial resources. On October 9th, we invite you to make a commitment of your financial resources to the mission and life of this church. Not out loud. Don't panic. I'm not going to be calling on anyone. I mean, I might, but I don't plan on it right now. Instead, you can make your pledge using these. They've been in the bulletin for the last several weeks. There's also a version that went out in the Courier newsletter, and there's a version that appears in the brochure that you can see in your pews today. Thank you. Oh, Barbara's displaying it for us. Thank you, Barbara. So what are you going to get for these gifts, right? You're not going to get a tote. You're not going to get a special mug. I mean, you're not. We have a lot of mugs, though, so if you need one, please take one. What will you get? As the brochure describes, what we will receive are congregational meals and visits to the homebound, including ourselves someday. We will receive educational and faith formation opportunities from infancy through our very last years. We will have worship that continues to point toward our past but remain relevant today. We will have opportunities for service and sharing that demonstrate in concrete ways the good news of beloved community. And we'll give money away, as is our practice. We will give money away through this place to make a statement about how God values the healing of bodies and souls. To date, we've got these teams, you know, that run our church, and each of the teams have submitted their proposals for how to make this happen in the coming year. So we've got a worship and music budget, we've got a property budget, what have you. So they've all submitted these to financial stewardship so we can start beginning the process of seeing what we need and how the pledges will match up. Now in this first draft, and let me emphasize, it is just a first draft. Our 2017 budget is 20% higher than this year. Now part of that is because we need to do a more robust job of preparing to care for our physical campus. If you saw the report on how much water we had visit us in the last couple of days, you'll know what I mean. We just need to be prepared. We need to plan for that eventuality. But also, we've got some dreamers in our church. The team chairs and the vice chairs, they have been dreaming big about how to maintain this as a place where more and more people can serve and be served in the years to come. Our leaders are letting God guide us toward a storehouse of abundance for the times when drought will come. And there is drought here. There's drought already. There is drought in the world, offset by terrible flooding, literal flooding and famine. But there is also a terrible drought of compassion and listening. The streets of America run with the blood of black people. Our emergency rooms, including right here, are overflowing with people who have overdosed on the drug to which they are addicted. Our police officers have become our de facto mental health caseworkers. And beyond this country, the waterways of Europe are themselves overflowing with the bodies of refugees. These stories are as scary and as old and as familiar as that first murder in the Bible and as Joseph being left in the dry well today. But for the last 151 years in this place, people just like us, worshipers and members, have shored up these walls just like Joseph did those silos of grain. It's because of them we know we need to give away actual money and actual food to care for actual bodies, but also offer up the sweet grains of prayer and song. Our canned goods include the godly place stories that teach our children to care. Our dry goods include the conversations that we have over coffee and in classes that can open up the possibilities to true action in response to suffering. Our pledges preserve a radical welcome as sweet and beautiful as a currant jelly. And then we offer that up in direct response to the overarching narratives of tribalism and hate in the world today. Last week, Jen Yacoffi shared the godly play account of Abraham and Sarah, and at one point she said, "Then Isaac and Rebekah had children, and their children had children, and those children had children. This went on for thousands and thousands of years until your grandmothers and grandfathers had children. Then your mothers, your fathers, your parents had children. Now you are part of that great family, which has become as many as the stars in the sky and in the grains of sand in the desert. We are the descendants of murderers and thieves, the jealous and the cynical. We are the children of the forgiven and the forgiving. We are the people who have accepted Christ's call to go out and proclaim to all the world that everyone is part of God's great family. So make a pledge to protect and preserve that great family, that message of great family, both today and tomorrow. Now, a pledge, even though we have you fill out one of these documents, a pledge is not a contract. If you make a pledge and you're not able to fulfill it next year, that's okay. Life happens. These are planning tools for us. Life happens. And pledge campaigns, stewardship campaigns, are not an effort to induce guilt. Right? We're not trying to make you feel bad. It would be lovely if everyone here could pledge tens of thousands of dollars. And I invite you to do that if you can. But not everyone can. And that's okay too. What I ask, and what I ask on behalf of your leadership, is that whatever you pledge, it reflects your commitment to these stories of jealousy and forgiveness, to God's dream of life feasting rather than death dealing famine. God's dreams are big. God's dreams take a long view. But when we choose, and it's our choice to do, to bring them away from fantasy and into reality, we regular people, can ensure that there will always be a storehouse, a silo of prayer and learning, reconciliation and liberation for all of God's people, right here at the corner of 6th and Kellogg. Amen.